I'm Rob Lamont, welcoming you to the award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. We're very pleased to present the world premiere of It Could Have Been a Wonderful Life, written by Stephen Brown and Michael Ulstrom. The story is inspired by the 1943 short story The Greatest Gift by Philip and Orne Stern, which served as the idea for the 1946 Frank Capra film It's a Wonderful Life. Starring as Jeffrey Bailey is Kyle Farrell, along with our wonderful actors from the 91.1 Players. Our special guests today are Carolyn Grimes as Aunt Zuzu and Jimmy Hawkins as Uncle Tommy Bailey. Carolyn played the original Zuzu in It's a Wonderful Life, and Jimmy was her younger brother, Tommy Bailey. Jimmy Hawkins is also the author of the new book, It's a Wonderful Life for Kids, published by Penguin. We welcome Carolyn and Jimmy to the 91.1 Players family. And now, our story, It Could Have Been a Wonderful Life, by Stephen Brown and Michael Ulstrom. The small town of Bedford Falls is all aglow with holiday lights that twinkle in the air, cool and crisp evening air. A blanket of snow has just fallen, which gives a real feeling of Christmas. But Jeffrey Bailey doesn't see any of this as he stares out of his bedroom window and sees the flowing river with pieces of sharp-edged ice rushing by. He begins to think about what he could do to stop thinking about losing his girlfriend and the argument he just had with his dad. The icy water looks so cold that Jeffrey wonders just how long someone could stay alive if they fell in or jumped in. After smashing a glass onto the table in his room and sees that his right hand is badly cut and is bleeding onto the floor, he then thinks to himself, I wish I had never been born.
Why bother?
I wouldn't say that if I were you, young man.
What? Wouldn't do what? Who said that?
As Jeffrey looks at the window, he sees the reflection of Clarence standing behind him. Jeffrey quickly turns around and...
What the...
Such naughty language you were thinking about.
Who said that?
I did.
Who are you?
Clarence.
Clarence?
Clarence. Yep, that's me.
But you're a girl.
And your point?
Clarence is a guy's name?
Let's just say that my parents decided to name me Clarence, okay? It's not unusual for my part of the universe.
Okay, but where did you come from?
Far, far away.
Hey, wait a minute. How did you know what I was thinking?
Let's just say we make it our business to know lots of things.
The young lady now standing next to Jeffrey was quite unremarkable. The sort of person you might pass on a crowded street and probably never notice, unless you saw her bright green eyes, which were the kindest and sharpest green eyes you might ever see. You would otherwise forget her altogether. Now that Clarence is actually standing in Jeffrey's room, it doesn't take too long for Jeffrey to blurt out,
"What are you carrying?"
"You mean this black bag?"
"Of course that's what I mean."
"I can't go anywhere without it."
"Are you trying to sell me something?"
"Nope. Trying to do much more than that. Lots more."
"Something tells me that I shouldn't even ask how you got into my room."
"Sure looks like more snow is going to fall tonight, doesn't it? It'll be nice to have a white and snowy Christmas this year."
"I guess."
"Are you feeling better now?"
"Of course. I'm just fine. What made you think that anything was wrong? You don't even know about..."
"Yes, I do, and that is nothing you should ever be thinking about. And on Christmas Eve, of all times, you have your family to think about, your mom, your dad, certainly your brother Willie, and even Bobby Wainwright and Carol Huffnagel."
"How do you know all those names? There's no way that..."
"Here it comes."
"Wait a minute. This is not my room. I never had my bed near the window like this."
"I know, and don't ask me how I know all of that. But then, it's very cold out here by the river."
Just as Clarence says that, the two of them are standing near the river's edge, and Jeffrey has on a very thin and tattered jacket, which he didn't have on just a few seconds ago.
"Where are we? How did we..."
"Oh, you are so full of questions. Just wait, you'll have lots more." "Bobby, look at all that snow falling. Why don't we go to Martini's for a soda and a burger?"
"That sounds like fun, Carol, but..."
"What's wrong?"
"Well, it's just too bad about Willie. He was such a good kid.
Oh, I know. Every time I think about that little guy, I get very sad. Very sad.
Hey there, Bobby. Carol, what about Willie? What's wrong?
They can't hear you. At least not right now.
What? That's crazy. We're right here and so are they. Bobby! Carol! Where's little Willie?
As Clarence and Jeffrey stand there and watch the world go by, Bobby Wainwright is having fun with Carol Huffnagel, who used to be Jeffrey's girlfriend, at least in the other world that Jeffrey used to know.
What was that you just said?
I said that I wish I had never been born, especially now that I see my best friend, Bobby, with my ex-girlfriend.
Oh, that's wonderful. That solves all my problems. And here I was afraid you were going to give me trouble. But now, you've got the solution yourself.
What do you mean? What problem?
Problems about never being born. All right, okay, it's done. You have it.
Yeah, right.
There. It's done.
You expect me to believe that?
You have no choice.
As Jeffrey looks out the window, he notices that the snow has stopped falling and the wind is no longer blowing. In fact, the sun is shining and birds are singing.
I know this must be a dream. There's no other explanation.
Wrong again, Jeffrey. This is not your day.
I know there are people who know who I am. And you, why are you here?
I was sent down for you. I'm your guardian angel.
This sounds like some very bad movie to me.
It's pretty silly to think that you'd even think of killing yourself because of your former girlfriend.
Isn't that enough? Wait, how did you know that?
Son, you obviously did not hear me before. You know, guardian, angel, all of that.
Well, you look like the kind of angel I'd get. What happened to your wings?
I haven't won my wings yet. That's why I'm an ASC.
ASC? What's
angel,
that?
Angel Second Class. I have to earn my wings, and you can help me, okay? Could you do that for me?
How could I ever do something like that?
By letting me help you and the homeless shelter for families.
What shelter? What are you talking about?
The homeless shelter, right there.
Yes, yes, I know that, Mr. Potter. But you told me we had another 30 days to make payment on that loan for the shelter.
No, no, you must have been mistaken, Reverend Dunbar. I'd never make such a stupid comment like that. Business is business.
Mr. Potter, it's almost Christmas. You know I couldn't find another place for the families that are here at the shelter right now.
Like I said, Reverend, business is business. And I don't believe in handouts. Not for you or anyone else. 3 days. That's all I will give you.
But Mr. Potter...
Good day, sir.
What is it, Samuel? Why do you look so down?
Ophelia, that was Mr. Potter from the bank. 3 days. That's all we have left here if we don't come up with the loan payment.
He'd never put us out on the street. Not at Christmas.
He'd do it to his own mother if he had to. Ophelia, we've been married for 10 years now. Would I really make a joke out of something like this?
No, of course not. But George Bailey did warn you about that old geezer.
Yes, I know. I'm trying to do the Christian thing by not thinking about the worst in someone.
Sure, but I don't think that leap of faith jumped over the line to include Potter.
And speaking of George Bailey, have you seen him lately?
No, he's been pretty broken up over little Willie.
Yeah, poor kid. My prayers go out to him and the Baileys.
Clarence, why is everyone talking about Willie?
Rather than tell you, let me show you.
George, have you seen Willie?
He and Uncle Billy went out to play with the dogs.
I didn't even know Billy was here. I hope Willie put on his heavy coat. You know how he gets a cold so easily.
Yes, I'm sure Billy made sure Willie is all bundled up.
I hope so.
As George and Victoria worry about Willie, the Bailey's only son, Uncle Billy watches as Willie runs after Molly, their ever so rambunctious border collie.
Willie, don't go running off too far. We need to get him back soon.
Okay, Uncle Billy. I just don't want Molly to get too crazy. Molly, come back here.
Willie, hurry back. It's getting late.
As Willie chases after Molly, Uncle Billy stops to rest, sitting down on an old tree stump. Standing 5 feet away is Jeffrey and Clarence, who have been watching all of this.
Uncle Billy?
Jeffrey, Uncle Billy...
Can't hear me. I know.
Is all of this starting to make sense to you now?
I think so.
Well, Let's see how you can deal with this.
Deal with what?
Who are you?
Jeffrey. I'm Jeffrey Jeffrey, Pratt.
Well, Jeffrey Pratt, just what are you doing out here?
Uncle Billy?
What? I'm afraid I can't hear you. With all this wind and everything, what did you say? Did you call me Uncle Billy?
No, I said, really.
Willie, it's about time you get back here. Little Molly, get back here. Come on.
Sorry we took so long. Choo! Guess Mom will be mad. Right?
Willie, say hello to Jeffrey. He was just walking out here in the woods.
Hi there, Willie. How you doing, kid?
I'm okay. Just a bit cold from the wind.
Willie, that's all I need for you to do is catch a cold or worse.
That's right, Jeffrey. A lot worse.
What do you mean, Clarence? Clarence? Hey there, girl. Molly, it's me, Jeffrey.
She does that sometimes. When she doesn't know who someone is. Say, how'd you know her name?
Oh, your Uncle Billy told me.
Oh, okay.
I did? Guess I don't remember. Well, Jeffrey, we have to get going. It's getting late, and Willie's mom will be worried. You know how moms can be.
Yeah, I do. Especially like Willie's. Nice to meet you two. And you too, Molly.
As they get ready to leave, little Molly runs over to Jeffrey, jumps up on his face, and gives him a great big lick on that face. As Willie, Uncle Billy, and Molly have turned the corner on the snow-filled path and are now out of sight, Clarence, who has been standing next to Jeffrey all along, but could not be seen, says to Jeffrey,
"There, your own brother and uncle didn't even know who you were."
I know that now. I really feel bad about all of this.
Even Molly growled at you.
Yeah, I know. But she licked my face before she ran off with them. I think she knew who I was.
You mean used to be?
Yeah, used to be. Clarence, what did you mean about little Willie?
Walk over here. And if you look way over there, you'll see what I mean.
As Jeffrey walks up on the little hill and looks down at the path that runs through the woods, he sees something really horrible.
Willie! Willie, look out for that ice. It's very thin.
Oh, that's nothing, Uncle Billy. It's just a little ice.
Willie, I can't reach you.
Uncle Billy, I can't reach you. Help! Help!
Clarence, I could have run over there and helped little Willie. Why didn't you let me? We just talked to them. They saw me.
But, Jeffrey, you do not exist as Willie's big brother, remember? He's gone. And if you were really here, as in before you asked to be dead, you were there for little Willie.
You mean I could have saved him?
You did save him, but not now. Let's get back into town, Jeffrey. Still lots to do and lots to show you.
I think I've seen enough. I don't like it.
There's more. Lots more.
I was afraid you'd say that. I just wish Aunt Zuzu was here. She'd know what to do for me. She always does.
As Jeffrey and Clarence walk down Main Street, the streetlights have been turned on, and Christmas candles in the windows begin to softly glow. Jeffrey, for the first time, notices that the vast spread of leafless branches are towering over him in the darkness of the side street. This is the first time Jeffrey feels a lot of guilt for the damage he has done to Bedford Falls. Willie drowned under the ice, and as Clarence said, there's more.
That's very strange.
You mean your right hand?
Yeah, it's not bleeding anymore. In fact,
the gash on your right hand is gone, right?
Yes. Yes. Just like Willie.
Aunt Zuzu, huh? Do you really think she could help you?
She always does.
Well, don't just stand there. Answer that phone over there.
Hello? Hello?
Jeffrey? Oh, Jeffrey? This is your Aunt Zuzu. I know you can hear me.
Yeah, I can. But how? How did you know where I was? I can't even see you.
Don't worry about the hows or the whys. Just remember what I told my dad when the whole town of Bedford Falls showed up to throw their money into the big pot.
You mean when everyone said just what a mean old man Mr. Potter was? His son is just as bad.
Well, they did say that, but I'm not talking about that.
Oh, you mean the Angel and the Wings story?
Yes. I just want you to remember that it's quite true. When you hear the bell, an angel really gets his or her wings.
I remember hearing you tell me that story a long time ago.
Yes, almost like it were yesterday.
But now, Aunt Zee, I'm all alone and very cold.
Jeffrey, you are never alone. I'm with you, and so is your faith and hope for the future.
I'm just very confused.
That happens to all of us. Just remember this, Jeffrey. You will soon see just how important your life could have been.
I already am seeing that.
You are a smart young man. It's never simple, always complex.
I know it's never simple, but how can I find my way?
She will help you find the way. Follow the rose petals, just like she says.
Who are you talking about? And what about Willie?
Clarence, just listen to her.
Okay, I will.
God bless you, Jeffrey. And remember, I will be there for you, always.
When Jeffrey hangs up the telephone, he turns around to say something to Clarence, but he is nowhere to be found. The sound of holiday music fills the street, and as people walk past Jeffrey, many of whom he knows, they simply ignore him, as if he did not exist. Just as Jeffrey turns the corner, he hears a sound that he could never forget. The sound of old man Potter, the bank president, yelling at some homeless woman sitting in an alleyway, staying warm from a fire in a trash can.
Hey, don't you have anything better to do than dirty up our streets with your trash? Get a job or get out of town. Where's Mayor Madigan when you need him?
Old man Potter. Nothing better to do than take out his anger on some homeless woman. Can't you leave her alone?
What did you say, boy?
You know what I said. That's why we have the local homeless shelter. Too bad you want to shut it down.
Boy, you are sticking your nose where it should not be. Who asked you anyway?
That's right, Mr. Potter. Who asked?
How do you know who I am? Who are you?
Everyone knows who you are. An angry old man.
You sound like someone I know in this town. But I've never seen you before. What I do know is that you're rude and a mouthy child who should not be talking to an adult that way, and especially not to me.
Maybe so, Mr. Potter, but someone has to stand up for those who need help.
Get out of my way, or I'll call police chief and have you thrown in jail.
Jeffrey, where did you go?
You disappeared after I hung up the phone.
Not so, Jeffrey. I've been right next to you all the time. I need to work on those angel techniques a little bit better. Boy, looks like you had quite a run-in with Mr. Potter.
That seems to be a Bailey trademark, Clarence. Having it out with the Potters.
We better get back over to the homeless shelter. I think they need you. By the way, Jeffrey, that old woman Potter was yelling at?
What about her?
Wasn't she familiar to you?
No.
She should be. She would have been your third grade teacher, Miss Lawrence. Poor child. Look over there. You see, she had a horrible accident. Something about someone driving through a stop sign. Severe brain damage now.
And I would have had something to do about preventing that?
Well, in a matter of speaking, the day she had the accident was the day that you got caught cheating on a third grade arithmetic test. And the sweet and dear Miss Lawrence stayed after school as you wrote 1,000 times on the blackboard, "I will not cheat again."
I don't remember that even happening.
It did. Or should I say it could have happened that way. Anyway, because she did not leave school right away, the car ran a stop sign and crashed into the side of Bartlett's hardware store. The driver died.
There's that word again. Could.
You could have had a wonderful life, Jeffrey. Too bad, though, not to be. Well, let's be off to the homeless shelter.
As Jeffrey and his angelic friend continue to walk the streets before they head over to the homeless shelter, Mr. Potter has just arrived at his stately mansion up on a hill overlooking all of Bedford Falls. Mr. Potter's wife, Elizabeth, greets him in the study with a cup of hot tea.
William, how was your day? Mine was dreadful. The Ladies' Auxiliary had its monthly meeting here. They are all such gossips, always talking about who's doing what they shouldn't be doing, and then we...
I'm glad you asked. We must do something about that horrid shelter on the west side of town. Such a riffraff.
Indeed. Mayor Madigan's wife was there today, and she said that they might get evicted from that old drafty house they're using for the shelter.
The mayor is up for re-election next year. So do you think he just might want to take care of that problem? Don't you agree, Elizabeth?
And then Mildred Franklin went on and on about her niece who just married a professor at the State College. Something about being in the English department. You do know how professors can be, don't you, William? William? William, are you listening to me?
Yes, yes, dear, of course. I was just reading here in the paper about that horrid homeless shelter.
Really? Dreadful, dreadful, just dreadful.
Quite curious, though. Seems like the neighbors are planning some sort of fundraiser to save it.
Really?
And then some very rude boy talked to me in the most undignified manner. He was trying to help some tattered old woman on 3rd Street Alley.
Who was he? Anyone we know?
I've never seen him before, but I tell you, if I didn't know better, I'd say he acted just like a Bailey. But then, of course, he's just some stranger in town. He sure was like a Bailey.
Bailey's always meddling into something. Did I tell you about Mary Jennings Worth and her younger sister? Well, I never...
I will stop in his office tomorrow.
You mean the mayor?
Yes.
Well, why don't you just call him? Here's the telephone.
Very well.
Hello?
Mayor Madigan, William Potter here.
Yes, Mr. Potter. What can I do for you, sir?
You must do something about shutting down that disgusting homeless shelter. And do it right now.
Mr. Potter, they have all the proper papers to operate that home. I just can't...
Yes, you can. Throw them out. You have an election coming up next year, and you know how I always make a substantial contribution to your campaign.
Of course you do, Mr. Potter. You aren't asking me to break the law and force them out, are you?
I would never suggest you breaking the law. Maybe just bend it a little.
I'd never do that, but let me look into it. I'll get back to you.
Do more than look. Act on it.
Mr. Potter, I will do what I can do, but...
No buts. Do it. Good night, Mayor Madigan.
The Bedford Falls Homeless Shelter is in for some hard times. Potter's Bank is calling in their loan, and several volunteer workers just quit. Reverend Dunbar, who runs the place, is telling his wife Ophelia,
"That man has no heart, let alone a soul."
Are you still dwelling on Mr. Potter?
Yes. He will do whatever he can to run us out of Bedford Falls, Ophelia. He just wears you down.
Samuel, looks like Mayor Madigan might be able to help. He's walking up the sidewalk right now.
Come in, Your Honor. Welcome back.
Thank you, Reverend Mrs. Dunbar. How are you on this brisk evening?
Mayor Madigan, would you like a cup of tea and some fresh-baked sugar cookies?
That would be wonderful, Mrs. Dunbar.
So, Mr. Mayor, what brings you out here tonight?
Reverend, we've had some complaints about the shelter. Again.
You mean Mr. Potter has been strong-arming you again?
Here you go, Mr. Mayor. Earl Grey tea and two of my famous sugar cookies.
Why, thank you, Mrs. Dunbar.
Please sit here.
Thank you.
What are you two talking about?
Old Man Potter and the shelter.
Reverend, I did check our records, and there are no less than 8 complaints during the past year about the shelter. He can be very influential, Reverend, just doing my job.
Mr. Mayor, is there anything you could suggest that would help us?
Not really, Mrs. Dunbar. Nothing short of a miracle would help us now.
I'm afraid I haven't seen any guardian angels lately.
If I see any, I'll be sure to send them your way. I must be going. Delicious cookies, Mrs. Dunbar, and thanks for the tea.
Thanks for stopping by, Mr. Mayor, and a Merry Christmas to you.
Same to you, Reverend. Ma'am?
Thank you, Rich. Bye-bye.
Clarence and Jeffrey have been walking the streets for a while and have stopped at Martini's for some hot chocolate. Place is crowded, so they sit at the counter.
What can I get for you two?
2 hot chocolates, extra whipped cream on both, please.
Yes, ma'am. Coming right up. Say, aren't you two new in town?
She is. I've been here before.
Really? I haven't seen you around.
Well, it's been a while.
Here you go. 2 hot chocolates, extra whipped cream.
Thank you, Mr. Martini.
Slow down, young lady. You might burn yourself.
All gone. Mighty good stuff.
Sure is. Mine is still a bit too hot.
Can I get you another, young lady? Hey, wait a minute. Your cup is still full. But I just saw you drink the whole cup. Say, what's going on here?
I gave her some of mine. Yeah, that's what I did.
Something's awfully fishy here.
Well, Mr. Martini, Jeffrey and I better be heading home.
I'm still trying to figure this one out. Yes, well, you two get home safely.
Thanks, Mr. Martini. Tell your son RJ that Jeffrey said hi.
RJ? No one calls Rudy that, but me and his mom.
Yeah, I know.
As Mr. Martini turns to put the two cups in the dishpan, he quickly turns around and sees that Clarence and Jeffrey are gone. Yet the door to the diner didn't even open. And that pot of hot chocolate, the one that was empty, is now full of the rich drink.
I think I need to sit down for a few minutes. Very strange things going on here. Very strange indeed.
Jeffrey and Clarence are walking down the street. And as they turn the corner onto Elm, Jeffrey stops in his tracks. Uncle Tommy is putting a letter into the corner mailbox. He walks up to Tommy and blurts out,
Uncle Tommy, it's me, your nephew, Jeffrey? Jeffrey Bailey?
What did you say your name was again?
Come on, Uncle Tommy. You know who I am.
You got the name right, except for that uncle part. Who are you?
You know, this is not very funny. Clarence told me it would be like this.
Look, son, I have no idea who you are.
My mother's Mary and my father's George. You're my dad's brother, his younger brother.
Well, anyone could know that. Mary and George, they don't have a son, only a daughter.
Did Aunt Zuzu put you up to this?
Zuzu's out of the country in Paris, and she's been there for 2 weeks.
No, that's not true. Not true.
Jeffrey, it's just like I told you. You were never born. Just like you asked for.
Only a daughter? That's not true. What about Willie and me?
Jeffrey, sit down and listen to me.
Okay. What is it?
Willie is no longer here, and you were never born.
What about Willie?
And you?
I don't care about me. It's Willie I'm worried about.
He died, remember?
But I grabbed him, and we escaped through the window in his upstairs bedroom when the fire was raging in the attic.
Think about what you're saying. We just saw Willie drown at the lake, and now you're talking about him in a fire.
You mean...
Yes! You were never born, remember? That's just what you wanted. No Jeffrey, no Willie. Plain and simple. You can't have it both ways, my boy.
But who was in that fire? Who got saved?
Carol Huffnagel, your ex-girlfriend.
There was never a fire, and I never saved her.
No, but her younger brother Kenny did, along with Willie.
This is getting very confusing. You mean, because Willie drowned in the lake, he was not there to help Kenny save Carol?
Right, boy. Yes, correct. How easily things change when just one little thing like you were never born.
Clarence, what have I done? Can't you get me out of this?
You got yourself into it. Only you can get yourself back.
Clarence? Where are you?
Clarence, you have really got yourself and Jeffrey into a real mess.
What do you mean? I did nothing. It was all Jeffrey.
Not necessarily. Remember, Clarence, this is a test for you, the final exam, the last chance you have.
You mean I have to... But what should I do, then?
No time. The time is now.
Plan A. All right. Can I practice at all? Oh, I'll do it.
As Clarence is heading back to Bedford Falls, Jeffrey is standing outside the shelter ready to ring the doorbell.
Okay, here goes nothing. Clarence, you're back. Where did you go this time?
Can't say. Highly classified. Quite high up.
Yes, can I help you?
Yes, I think we can. May we come in?
Reverend Dunbar, this boy is here with this girl. Should I let him in?
What can I do for you two?
Plenty. Trust me, lots.
I think we can help answer your prayers.
What did you say?
I think you heard what they said.
Somehow, I think they can really do that.
Hey guys, come here. We have company.
We have work to do, and fast, before Potter catches wind of this.
You're a good kid. Real good.
Okay, get to it. Give us the plan.
Well, The first thing we do is get the word to people that we want them all to meet here at the shelter tomorrow afternoon. Then they all have to let Potter know that they're going to...
Jeffrey and Clarence are helping the Dunbars and everyone else fake out Potter into trying to get him to change his mind about shutting down the shelter.
What's all that noise? This is Blandingham. Come here at once. Where is that secretary?
Okay, everyone. Listen up. When the tower clock strikes 11, we're all going to march right into Potter's bank.
Oh, Bobby Wainwright, the devil is coming out in you.
Carol, trust me. It's not the devil.
Okay, Clarence. I believe you.
Everyone, let's get ready.
8, 9, 10, 11.
As the clock hits the magical time of 11, a mass of people, all holding their savings books in their hands, crowd their way into the lobby of Potter's Bank.
What's going on in here? What in the world?
Mr. Potter, here's my savings book. I'm going to withdraw all my money right now.
George Bailey, I should have known you were behind this trickery.
This time, Potter, you're wrong.
Same thing for me, Mr. Potter. I want all the money in my account.
You too, Martini.
I'll take it all in small bills.
Same here, Potter. Larger bills are fine for me.
Mayor Madigan. Or should I say, ex-mayor after next year's election.
The money, Potter. Just give me my money. I'll let the people of Bedford Falls decide if I'm worthy of re-election.
Okay. I get the message. You folks are not happy with the personal service we've always provided Bedford Falls.
Mr. Potter, that's not the reason.
It's you, the rude kid from the alley. What do you have to do with this?
Everything. Well, almost everything.
This is all about the homeless shelter, isn't it?
Yes, Mr. Potter, it is.
Well, what do you want from me?
Shut down the shelter!
Do you think for 1 minute that I'm going to let a mob like you tell me what to do?
William, I think they already have. You'd better rethink your position.
Well, Mr. Potter, what's your decision?
I think that... Well, maybe I need to...
William J. Potter III, there is only one decision.
Okay, everyone. Maybe I've been a bit too harsh on that shelter. I think Potter Savings and Loan of Bedford Falls can find another way to help... To help out, yes, to help out, the shelter will stay open.
Well, Jeffrey, you've done it. I can't believe it.
Jeffrey, I knew you could do it.
Willie, is that you?
Who else do you think it would be? An angel?
Of course not. I was just... Wait, Clarence? Where did you go this time?
Son, who's Clarence? What's this all about?
Dad! Mom! It's you!
Of course it's us! What are you talking about?
Dad, I'll be back in a while. I have to find Clarence.
Jeffrey, you did it. You changed everyone's life, and it's a wonderful life. No more coulds.
Why did you change me back?
Because they need you. Now... In the future and certainly back in the past.
I know that now.
I just wanted to make sure that you did. You had the greatest gift of all, Jeffrey. The gift of life.
Thank you, Clarence, for helping me see that.
And don't forget what your Aunt Zuzu said.
Giving, caring, and loving really is what life is all about.
I love you, Aunt Zuzu. You're the best.
No, Jeffrey, you are and always will be.
What about you, Clarence? What's going to happen to you now? What about your wings?
I think your Aunt Zuzu and Grandpa George said it best all those years ago.
Look, Daddy, Teacher says every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
This has been the world premiere of It Could Have Been a Wonderful Life, written by Stephen Brown and Michael Alstrup, and inspired by the 1943 short story by Philip Van Doren Stern, The Greatest Gift, which served as the idea for the 1946 French Capra film, It's a Wonderful Life, which is celebrating its 60th anniversary next week. Our directors were Ryan Farrell and Steve Brown. As always, the award-winning WGTD Radio Theater features members of the 91.1 Players. Starring in today's program were Kyle Farrell as Jeffrey Bailey and Leslie Utek as Clarence the Angel. Our very special guest stars from the original It's a Wonderful Life were Carolyn Grimes as Aunt Zuzu and Jimmy Hawkins as Uncle Tommy Bailey. Other stars from the 91.1 Players were Brian Aldrich, Linda Guy, Mike Radigan, Jim Blair, Suzanne Wilczek, Byron Huisdens, Rob Lamont, Vicky Dumay, Dan Sticka, Ike Check, Ryan Farrell, Joan Rory, Tyler Farrell. The voice was played by The Voice, and yours truly, Carolyn Recker, your host.
I'm Steve Brown, back with you again. I'm looking at the clock on the wall, and, well, we still have some time left. Of course, I knew that. But in any case, we are going to end today's WGTD Radio Theater's 16th season broadcast with some music from past shows. First, we'll hear Jill Jensen and myself on vocals with Jack Grosso on guitar, followed by John Ludi Paleo on vocals here on the WGTD Radio Theater. Hope you enjoy.
When I'm worried and I can't sleep, I count my blessings instead of sheep, and I fall asleep counting my blessings.
When my bankroll is getting small, I think of when I had none at all, and I fall asleep counting my blessings. I think about a nursery and I picture curly heads,
and one by one I count them as they slumber in their beds.
If you're worried and you can't sleep, just count your blessings instead of sheep, and you'll fall asleep counting your blessings. If I'm worried and I can't sleep, I count my blessings instead of sheep, and I fall asleep counting my blessings.
If you're worried and you can't sleep,
just count your blessings instead of sheep, and you'll fall asleep counting your blessings.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe help to make the season bright. Tiny tots with their eyes all aglow will find it hard to sleep tonight. They know that Santa's on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh. And every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. And so I'm offering this simple phrase, kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you. This child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you.
You've been listening to the WGTD Radio Theater's annual holiday show, a little different way of presenting it this year. Over the past 16 years, the WGTD Radio Theater series has won 24 state and national awards. We look forward to being back on the air with new, original, and live broadcasts in the coming 2021 year. As co-executive producers and creators of the Radio Theater series over the last 16 years, Michael Ostrup and I want to thank everyone here at WGTD Public Radio and Gateway Technical College, especially David Cole, General Manager of WGTD-FM, and Dr. Brian Albrecht, President of Gateway Technical College, for their incredible support over all these years. And also to our sponsor, the Kenosha Law Firm of Aaliyah, Dumay, and McTernan, and all of our sponsors over these years. And finally, to you, our listeners, thank you for being in our audience live, in person, and over the airwaves. For the WGTD Radio Theater and all of the members of the 91.1 players over all of our 16 seasons, I'm Steve Brown. Thank you so much for listening. This is WGTD HD, serving Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. NPR News and classical music on your gateway.